All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for everyone for coming along. My name's Tim Jones from Hitachi Data Systems, and I wanted to speak to you today about some things to do with Exchange 2010 deployments and different scenarios for dealing with deployments of Exchange 2010 and what we can do with meeting what our customers, either from a business sense or from a end-user client perspective, require from our Exchange environments. So, first of all, to give you a little bit of background and context about myself, and this information will become more relevant as we go through the presentation and things like that, and so we don't have too much time spent with PowerPoint slides, which I'm sure you're getting a little bit tired of so far in the TechEd conference. But I started my IT career back in at the start of 1990. All right, so in the years 1990-95, I was working pretty much in the sphere of a computer operator, which is what would often be called a computer administrator these days. And so back in those days, I was working on VAC systems and AS400s and going through and having to deal with some of the fun things like 6200-foot tapes and carrying those around, and large-scale hard disks where you would, larger than a desktop computer these days, or probably around about the size of a 4RU rack system, you would have a 500 megabyte drive. All right. From 95 through to 2000, I was working with companies such as BHP in their global messaging centre. All right. So we had 25,000 users that we were managing and migrated across from MS Mail 3.2 across to Exchange 4.0. All right, so as one of the early adopters, we had Exchange running as our backbone for the BHP messaging system before it was fully released, or a full RTM release code was put through. So we went through, and that was because if anyone remembers back to mail systems back in those days, MS Mail was a pain in the ass when you got to a level of dealing with it from an enterprise standpoint. So Exchange was a huge leap forward for what we were doing in that space. From around about 2000 to 2005, I was working in with companies such as Quest Software, working in migrating users and user accounts across, so Active Directory and Exchange, and migrating them over for companies like Telecom New Zealand and some of the government organisations here, and dealt with migrating over a couple of 100,000 mailboxes from Exchange 5.5, usually through to Exchange 2000 or Exchange 2003. And Active Directory accounts and things like that across. And then I moved into a role as an infrastructure architect. So dealing in the, for the last 5 years before joining Hitachi Data Systems, working through as an infrastructure architect. And that's giving me an interesting perspective on how we go through and look things. Right? So I look at the world in a very ordered view. Right? So what we look at when we're looking at a solution is we need to ensure that what we're delivering to our customers, be they internal or external customers, first of all meets what it's required to do, all right? So that we're putting something forwards which is actually going to meet the purpose of what the business needs to do with the system, all right? So the business, the way that we get the money through to do projects is the business actually has to have some driver to go through and implement something, all right? So first and foremost, we need to have something that works. All right? Then, to get something that works, we have a myriad of ways to go through and deal with that. All right? But what we want to go through and deal with implementing something that works is that we want something that's, from a business perspective, first of all, cost-effective. All right? So that's a big deal for the business, because the business is giving you the money. They want to make sure they're getting the best bang for buck. And as part of that, they also need to make sure that they're getting something which is efficient, all right? So it's going to go through and not only cost a lot up front, but it's going to continue to be something which is of value to the customer, not going to drive additional operational or other costs within the environment moving forwards. And we also, as we know with most businesses, we want to have something flexible, all right? So moving forwards, who knows what's going to change on the forefront? We've got turbulent times in the economic sector at the moment. We're very fortunate in Australia, but through around a lot of the rest of the world, we're going through and dealing with other issues, all right? So other problems that are being put forwards and other opportunities come up. And from a business perspective, we need to go through and have IT systems that are able to deal with those sort of things as well. All right? So we want to have a flexible, cost-efficient environment that we can go through and expand and use as much as possible. All right? So, which just brings us through to looking at our storage challenges from the exchange perspective. So what we're looking at is, as we all know, all right, following Moore's Law for CPUs, we have the capacity of our CPU infrastructure doubling every 18 months. That's also true for our storage. In fact, some areas of storage, unstructured data and such, are going through and outstripping that rate, right? That we're going through and creating huge amounts of data, right? So, for example, I've got a pair of sunglasses now that can record HD video, right, and sound. All right, so I've got a 16 gigabyte card inside my sunglasses, and they can go through and record that full 16 gig in 1.5 hours. All right? So as far as content goes, we have more capabilities than ever to create content and expand our use of the environment. All right? So we need to go through and have ways of capturing that information, of continuing to have our systems grow and make sure that if we put something in now, that we're also planning for what we need in the future. We also need to manage our governance for the environment. All right, so this isn't just talking from the American standpoint, as we'll go through in a moment, but also from the Australian standpoint. All right, so this isn't just about things like you might have heard about HIPAA or Sarbanes-Oxley. This is pertinent in Australia. We have legal requirements for what we do with our data systems and with exchange to go through and ensure that we're meeting our legal requirements individually and as an organisation. All right. We also have data that we need to keep, but we don't necessarily want to keep it on expensive storage. We want to go through and be able to manage where we're putting it in a cost-efficient manner. All right. We also have data, it might move through different applications, different application versions, but we still need to keep access to the data. So, for example, in the health services industry in the UK, there's now a requirement to keep all data about individuals for the lifespan of every individual plus 5 years. All right? So you're looking at keeping data which is created now, right? So MRIs, for example, which may be a gigabyte in size. You may have several of them. You need to keep those potentially for 105 years, all right? And you need to have them accessible for that period of time. So we need to go through and keep this swath of data which is coming in available and thinking about how we're actually going to use it now and in the future. All right? And as we know, 24/7 operation. Working in a finance company, I know this well because we'd go through and have to deal with managing some sort of maintenance window, but how do you do that when you're dealing with customers around the world, right? For example, we had a 12,000-seat Siebel environment that was that I helped implement, but it's used in China, it's used in Singapore, it's used in Australia, it's used in the UK. All right? How do you come up with a maintenance window that manages that sort of thing, as well for our exchange deployment as well? And not all data is created equal. So as we said before, managing the tiers is difficult, all right? But we want to go through and also make sure that we're not keeping data that we don't need. All right? So why would we want to keep everything? If we don't have a requirement to keep it any further, we want to go through and manage how we the life cycle of that information moving through. All right? And as I said before, we just continue to scale. All right? So scale keeps on going up. Now, one of the interesting things is you would have seen graphs like this before. Right? We all know operational costs are going through the roof and continue to rise. What's outstripping that at the moment is the cost of power, cooling and floor space. So that's likely to go through and get to a very high level soon as well, especially with things like carbon taxation coming through. We also have physical constraints on our data centres for the power and cooling and things like that they do. We have a number of customers that have actually can get no more power into their actual data centre. All right, so they have no more capability to expand. Even if they had the floor space, they can't physically get more electricity into their data center. All right, so you need solutions which not only, as I said before, meet the business requirement, but we have these other things for our data center implementations that we need to go through and manage as well. All right, so making sure that what we put in is power efficient. All right, it's nice to have a green data center from a feel-good perspective, from looking after the future and what we're doing, but also very much from a business perspective. All right? The cost of power is going to double in the next few years, and going through and putting something in place which is going to reduce the cost of power will save real dollars for the business. But what the business sees is what they have discretionary sign-off on, which is this small bit down the bottom here. All right? So when you put something in front of the business, they have to sign off on X amount of dollars for going through and implementing some shiny new piece of hardware, okay? And that's what they've got access to, and so that's what they have focus on, all right? But from the business overall, you need to be aware of the overall implementation of the system, all right? So how much is it going to cost to administer? How much is it going to cost to look after in the long run? And how much is it going to cost to cool and power and the floor space that we're taking up with the environment? So we've got all of these things going through. Lots of challenges which we're facing in the email environment. Okay, so it's not easy being an email administrator, right, or an implementer of Exchange or those systems, because as with everything else in IT, we're expected to go through and have a smaller budget each year, but go through and deliver more. Right? So part of that is helped with the explosion of computing. Again, Moore's Law gives us more power, more for our CPU, more storage, more memory in the system. Right? So we can do more with less from that perspective, but it doesn't get past the human perspective. We need to manage the environment. We need to ensure that it goes through and meets our ongoing requirements that we're putting forwards for the clients. As I said before, we've got requirements from a governance perspective as well that we're dealing with. As I said, it isn't just HIPAA and Sarbanes-Oxley from the US and UK and that sort of thing where we have requirements to go through and meet our legislative requirements. We can actually be subpoenaed information out of our email systems. So this information needs to be kept. And also importantly, we don't want to keep it longer than it needs to be. All right, so from a legal perspective, if you have information which should have been deleted 3 years ago, all right, for whatever reason, it wasn't deleted, that can still be brought up in a legislation and it might be incredibly embarrassing. Right? Something that should have been deleted that legally you didn't need to keep all of a sudden comes up in a court case for your business and you're raked over the coals over something which should have never come up in a discovery on a legal implementation. All right, and so we have all these things that the customers are facing. All right, so we've got things going through their minds. All right, architecture, all right, configuration, management. All right, so what things are we facing from peaks? What sort of activity are we facing, and how are we going to go through and face the challenges that we're dealing with? All right, so we have a large amount of things that we need to deal with when coming into those things. But again, they draw back to those principles. Is it fit for purpose? Is it cost effective? Is it efficient? And is it flexible? All right? But all of these things come into the thinking about how we go through and implement a system. All right, so what Exchange has done over the years, though, has helped us a lot with going through and putting Exchange in. Right? From the old days of Exchange 4, 5, 5.5, 2000, we reached 2003, right, which was a big improvement over those previous versions. It had a lot of advantages, but we went through and still had a number of issues that we're facing. Right? So we're running into performance constraints on the environment. At that point with 2003, we didn't have a huge capacity constraint. Right? So we went through and had limited mailboxes. Users didn't expect big mailboxes. But as I said before, we're having an explosion of user-created content. Right? We all want to have gigabyte mailboxes or bigger. All right? If Google can do it for us, why shouldn't our organization be able to do it for us? All right? So we want to go through and have that available. We also had problems with how we went through and implemented it from a hardware perspective and going through and managing it in an ongoing basis. When Exchange 2007 came along, we went through and had some things get better with performance, all right, so how we went through and the CPU cycles that Exchange would take, how we'd go through and implement it, certainly helped us with how we went through and deployed Exchange 2007. All right. We started to have some issues with capacity, though. All right. Overall, though, it was an improvement in what we went through and had with Exchange 2003. Exchange 2010 is a big step forward. All right. So performance is excellent now. All right. We've got excellent ways of deploying 2010. It's very flexible. But again, we have the big issue around the amount of disk space that we're using in the environment, right? And the expandability of the environment and our ability to go through and meet that expectation for the what we're putting in now and what we're putting and what we're going to require in the next few years from the system that we're putting in at the moment. All right? So we need to plan for future requirements now. We no longer have problems with a bunch of things. They've essentially fallen out of the picture. All right, so the architecture of Exchange 2010 has changed from the previous versions. Right, we don't have geo-clustering and things like that anymore. All right, so for anyone that had to deal with those, they were painful to set up. All right, difficult to set up a lot of the clustering technologies on Exchange, particularly geo-clustering, right, because you had such constraining hardware requirements and link issues and things like that. Right. We've also got a bunch of other things that have come better, but again, we've still got our capacity problem. Right. And it's going to get worse as time goes on. Right. So data will become more ubiquitous. Right. So as I mentioned earlier, right, I can remember going through as a VAX operator and having to carry 20 6250 tapes up the stairs. Right. These are the big white round tapes that you would have seen on old episodes of some science show or something like that. You know, the tapes that went backwards and forwards. I look like a very hefty Robbie the Robot walking up the stairs. All right, but those tapes, they were what we termed 6250 BPI, or around about 21 meg sitting on a tape. All right, technology which is going through and being tested at the moment, they have a theoretical maximum of 1.6 petabytes per square centimetre. All right? That amount of data is mind-blowing. All right? So you're looking at, you know, smaller than a postage stamp, and it's able to hold probably two or three times a large environment's total data. Okay? And so the hard disk certainly isn't dead. There's new technologies coming down the track, and data will continue to grow. All right, so that won't be a limitation. But what we need to look out for is the availability of our application. All right, so we get more out of the box with Exchange 2010, all right, but that's not everything that we need to deal with. From what we're looking at with Exchange, all right, it goes through and helps us with hardware, software, disk drive failure. All right, we can deal with that out of the box. Physical corruption, lost items, logical corruption. All right, so all of those things, we've got availability straight out of the box to go through and manage and deploy. All right, with Exchange 2010. We need to concern ourselves with other methods that we can lose data, though. All right, so viruses, we need to make sure our Exchange servers and our clients all manage that. We want to make sure that we have something to protect us from destructive loss. All right, so we still need backups. We can have disk-based backups, all right, or tape-based backups. Tape certainly isn't dead. All right. Tape is still a big-time feature of most data centres, although disk is coming up as well. And malicious action. All right. So we want to have isolated environments, lag copies, all right, separated backups, all right, to protect us from a rogue agent within the environment. But going through and looking at how we actually deploy Exchange 2010, we've got a number of tools available. First of all, we have the Microsoft tool. All right, so that's an excellent view of giving you an idea of what you need, right, looking at the number of IOPS you need, so that's IOs per second that you need across your environment. That gives you a view around what sort of disks and what sort of geometry you need in the environment. Right? But that's not the whole picture. Right? So that may come out and say you need to have 470 2-terabyte disks, for example, sitting in the direct access system. Again, going back to those 4 points that I started off with, right, that may meet the immediate requirement for going through and deploying the environment, but not necessarily the overall requirement for making sure that you've got the best, efficient, flexible environment. All right, so going through and you're very likely to be constrained in the future for adding more disks to that environment. We've also got from Hitachi a view on our website for going through and deploying into a SAN-based environment or going through and having a direct access disk through our SAN environments deployed across to the Exchange servers. Right? And we want to go through and make sure that we're putting out the correct configuration of hardware and software to ensure that we've got an environment which is reliable and able to continue to be reliable for the future. All right, so as I said, when we're doing these tools, we want to watch costs as well. All right, so how much is it going to cost us from a floor space, power, etc. cost? All right, so these soft costs, which are not directly visible through to the business, still need to be paid at some point. All right, so going through and having a view around these costs is important. All right, and it's often, I know it's difficult. I've been in the situation where you're working for an environment and you need to just go through and get something in to meet an immediate requirement and you're chasing your tail going through and just meeting the fighting the fires that you're fighting already. All right? But for businesses that are interested in really driving down costs, you need to take in the big picture. What is the overall environment costing you? All right, how are you going through and deploying it? Is the environment flexible that you're putting in place? And those important soft costs around operational side, right, power and cooling, some of the big ones which can be dealt with from an architecture and implementation standpoint. So looking at from the Hitachi view of the world, there's also looking at a converged implementation of Exchange 2010. So in this, using an end-to-end platform between Hitachi and Microsoft to go through and deploy Exchange 2010. All right, so this allows us to have a large-scale implementation. So this is looking at, for example, either a large organisation's deployment of Exchange or a cloud computing deployment of Exchange, right, where you're looking at going through and being able to expand the number of mailboxes rapidly. Right, or expand them over time, or ensure that you've got the capability to expand it in the future. Right, so there's technology similar to this from other vendors, but this leverages off, some of you may be aware that Hitachi did mainframes back in the 80s and 90s and things like that. This is leveraging some of that technology through to the Windows Server side of things, right, what we call LPARing, or logical partitioning, right, which is also maybe recognised from technologies such as AS400, right, where we go through, I'll show you shortly, but we're able to split up and share a physical box, right, and set up a physical chassis the way that we want it to be set up. Right, so looking at a Blade Center implementation of Exchange 2010, we can go through and split up the physical blades which are in the system. So in here you can see we've got 4 physical blades in the environment. All right? And we can present, rather than using a hypervisor, we can physically present a number of CPUs and memory and split it between the individual systems. So we've got our servers here, we've got our client access servers, we've got a management server, all right, AD server, and we've also got a hot spare. All right, so this is something, new to the server environment. All right, so you'd be aware of things like N+1 application servers in clusters and things like that, where we have a spare server sitting there from a clustering perspective, or RAID technology, where we go through and have a spare disk sitting there in case we have one fail, a hot spare. All right, so in this case, we've got the capability to implement a hot spare server so that if we have a physical failure on an environment, because I know that one of the challenges that we faced in large-scale finance side of things is that if we had, we could build something so that we would be able to go through and deal with a failure. Right? So we had a high availability solution. We would go through and have an N+1 application cluster, for example. So for SQL Server, we might have three nodes in a cluster. We might have a database server, we might have a reporting server, and we have a spare server. All right, so we would go through, if we had one of them fail, it would fail over onto the other one. If the server was going to be out for an extended period of time, however, we would need to fail over into the DR environment because from a risk perspective view, we couldn't go through and have that server sitting in a state where it could we had a single point of failure, essentially. All right? And so if we failed over to the DR site, from an internal politics and reporting perspective, that would then become a high-severity ticket coming through, all right? And then the CIO would know about it. Right? And in an organisation like that, if you can avoid the CIO getting involved, all right, believe me, you don't want the CIO involved. All right? So in this situation, if you have an individual failure, you can go through and manage it by failing over onto the additional cluster node. But with this view, we can go through and increase the capacity in the environment. All right, so we've got a progression path from 8,000 users through to 24,000 users. All right, so now we've got a much larger implementation of Exchange. We can go through and grow organically, all right, without a large implementation of additional rack space, additional power, all of the coupling required to go through to our disk storage and things like that as well. But we can go through and move beyond there. All right, so we can go through and move across to multiple blade systems. All right, and this is a reference architecture that's available from the Hitachi websites that's been worked on between Hitachi and Microsoft for building a large-scale view of Exchange deployments. So 48,000 users. And we can then move across further, up to 96K users. All right, so we've got the ability to go through and grow from a modest implementation if we think that we're going to have an environment that has a large requirement for growth, up to a very large-scale Exchange environment. All right, and this is then looking at what I was talking about before, having a hot spare server available for us. So we have our disk access groups and things like that accessible in the environment for Exchange. If we have a server go down, we can go through and have it brought up automatically and automatically have it available to the storage as well. So it has the storage, the NICs, the same IP addresses and things like that available and brought up as if it was the same server. And as I mentioned before, we also got the ability to go through and partition how we set up our environment. So, for example, if we've got, in some cases, I remember applications such as WebSphere, where you have a very small requirement for going through and delivering an application to a small number of users, but it runs on WebSphere, which has very expensive licensing requirements. Right? So rather than per socket, it's on per core. So if you could go through and give a single application server a single core and a modest amount of memory for what's required, then you can drive down your application server costs. All right, so which is different from the... Because it used to be interesting going back a few years with the way that IBM would license for VMware machines, for example, or virtualized machines, that they would allow you to go through and license across an entire server and have a large amount of clients on there. All right? They then realised that people were going through and consolidating to virtualised environments and changed their licensing model so that you went through and still paid them bucket loads of money. All right, so this is a method where you can physically constrain an environment to go through and just give you what you require and split it up as you require, or you can go through and concatenate blades. So, for example, for a client at the moment, we're looking at concatenating four blades together, giving them a large amount of processing power and a terabyte of memory to an application server. All right, so it gives you capability for that high-end computing view. All right, so business intelligence type applications or large-scale exchange deployments. All right, and this is looking at the 96,000 user architecture, which is available on the Hitachi website. All right, so we've got the paper up there where we've got the Brocade switches, our SAN storage back end to the environment, and the compute blade environment sitting at the front. All right, so this is where they've gone through and not only implemented it but tested it. All right, so gone through and used stress tools and things like that in the environment to ensure that it actually meets the sort of loads that we require. All right, so looking now at a different side of it, looking at the storage architecture of our Exchange 2010 environment. All right, so what we have available from a Hitachi standpoint is a view around the number of users that we're implementing into the environment. All right, so the number of users that we can support, depending upon the different models there across the bottom, moving through to large-scale implementations. All right, and up to very large-scale environments by using enterprise-class storage within the environment as well. So you can scale to pretty much any level of users, and there's a progression path through from a very small implementation and growing it further beyond that. All right, so that's one of the things that you need to be aware of is your future growth view. All right, do you have views around what your future growth will be? Do you have views around how the business will expect Exchange to be used within the environment? Because you need to have something available for how you're going to go through and utilise your storage in the future. We also have a reference view around using Exchange 2010 with Hyper-V. So going through and managing viewing how you would implement Exchange 2010 on Hyper-V, both with SAN-based storage or going through and using iSCSI, so direct access from the Hyper-V clients through to the back-end storage. All right, so multiple ways that you can go through and manage the storage, either by manually deploying the iSCSI through to the end guest OSs, or going through and having a combined view with traditional SAN storage deployed through to the hosts. But just want to take you through a view of what a support scenario would look like. All right, so first of all, looking at what we term as JBOD, or just a bunch of disks. So if we have a bunch of disks connected by SCSI or internal disks, how would we go through and deal with a failure of a disk in that environment? So with the JBOD implementation, we don't have any RAID in the environment. We've got individual disk access groups that are sitting on, for example, a 2 terabyte drive. All right? And we would have a large number of them to go through and a large number of copies of the DAGs to go through and ensure that we've got redundancy across the environment. But what happens when an actual disk fails? All right, so this is one of the things which would concern me if I was still managing the Exchange environment. So if we have a failure of a drive, or a drive begins to fail, all right, we end up with some errors coming through on the environment, we end up with some alerts and things like that being triggered. But with the Exchange 2010 implementation, we don't have any problems for the users. All right, so this is fantastic news from the perspective of the environment. In the past, we would go through and have problems with previous versions of Exchange. We would either need to fail over to another cluster node, or if we're using shared environment, disk environment, we would need to go back to DR or recover from backup. All right. We would have IT go through and investigate the environment, what's actually happening with the system. All right. work out what the problem is. All right, so teams that aren't involved in the actual problem, disengage. We have change control and to go through and replace the disk, etc. We replace the hardware. We then need to go to the OS level and exchange level and install the disk into the OS side of things and recreate the database. All right, reseed and resolution complete. We never have any problem from the user side, but there's a lot of people involved from the IT side. All right, so we go through and have an inefficient resolution of the system. If we look at a different view, all right, so going through and using a SAN-based implementation, if we have a drive begin to fail, all right, it goes through and reports it through to an engineer. All right, so the array notifies the IT users. All right, we have no impact again to end users. We have the drive replaced. All right, so someone comes on site, replaces the drive. We don't need to do anything at the exchange or OS level in this case. The drive just gets slotted back in. All right, everything rebuilds and we move on. All right, so from that perspective, the impact against the IT group is much lower. We don't have a large outage time. We don't have a large impact on what's happening with our limited resources we have in our IT system. From the backup perspective, all right, so going through, as I said before, you need to ensure that the environment is still backed up. Whether that goes through to tape or through to disk-based backup, you still need to make sure that your exchange environment is backed up in some way. All right, so with the Hitachi technology, you'd go through and it uses the VSS snapshots, all right, to go through and back it up. All right, so we're not impacting user experience or causing any issues on the system when we go through and back it up. But we're going through and making sure that we've got the data available for those situations where we may have major downtime. All right, so if we lose a data center, we have a fire. We had a client that had a fire in a data center in Melbourne last week, and it means they don't have one half of their equipment for a reasonable amount of time. All right, they need to repurchase a whole bunch of equipment because even though most of the equipment wasn't physically damaged by the environment, all right, most equipment manufacturers won't warranty a system which has gone through and sucked in soot and things like that across its motherboards. All right, so from a risk perspective, it's not something that you can manage from a vendor perspective. So all of that equipment that, even though the fire was contained to one small area in the data centre, all of the equipment pretty much needs to be replaced. All right? And so they're missing a large amount of their DR capability for a reasonable amount of time. And so they need to make sure, so backup in that situation becomes a lot more important. They no longer have a DR site. They need to rapidly bring forwards their purchase of new equipment and make it available online as quickly as possible. So the things that we need to look at is we need to meet our RTO and RPO. Right? So how quickly we can recover our environment and how much data we lose when we do so. Right? We also need to go through and reduce our costs in what we're doing, go through and improve our regulatory requirements. All right, so again, how are we going through and responding to any legal requirements across the environment? Recover any critical applications. All right, so how quickly we can get our critical applications up and running and ensure that they continue running. And have an agile business. So as I mentioned before, flexibility is king from a business perspective. All right, so not only putting in something to meet the business's initial requirements, but having some sort of view as to what they may require in the future and how they will go through and need to implement things. All right, so how we can expand the environment, how we can grow it. So just looking at now the exchange programs that we're looking at from a Hitachi perspective. All right, so we go through and work hand in hand with the Microsoft consulting side, and we also have our own consultants that go through and assist from a SAN perspective. All right, so we can go through and assist with how you deploy Exchange 2010 or work hand-in-hand with your delivery organisation to ensure that Exchange 2010 is deployed correctly, efficiently, and meeting some of those soft cost goals for your environment as well. So going through and making sure that we have a green implementation that's going to go through and cut down on the power and cooling costs, as well as being easy to manage. We're also members of the ESRP program. All right, so this is something that Microsoft has in place up on their website, so you can go through onto the Microsoft website and see what individual storage arrays or server systems and things like that are rated to for the number of users that you can push through the environment. All right, so we have a large number of tested configurations with Microsoft up on their site to go through and ensure that that what's being put on the floor in your data centres actually can deliver the number of users and perspective that's required across the environment. Okay. So here you can see a view around the user implementations. So we've got 100,000 user mailboxes, which is tried and tested in the Microsoft environment for going through and deploying to end user customers. All right, and just one final thing. So this has gone through. I'll let you guys go reasonably quickly. But what we're also doing is we have some software IT operations analyzer, which we're doing demonstrations of on the Hitachi stand. All right, so this is non-exchange level application root cause analysis software. All right, so. So it's not about storage, it's about going through and looking across your entire environment, discovering what's on your environment, and then going through and telling you where an actual problem lies within there. All right, so if you're interested in going through and seeing what's actually happening across your entire environment or interested in looking at finding that sort of information out, visit our stand and we'll be having a demonstration at 3 p.m. on Thursday. All right. Okay. Now, are there any questions at all? All right, well, I'll be here over the next few days out of the Hitachi booth or wandering around. But feel free to come and speak to me or if you want to go through and talk through with any of your exchange issues or any other issues you might have. All right. Thank you very much for your time.